Hello, everybody. Welcome to Roll 'em If You Got 'em, episode 26. We kind of forgot to mention with the previous episode, but welcome to 2021. This week, I, Carl, am joined by Dakota as usual, and we also have a very special guest. We have Chase from On the Table Gaming joining us. Thank you for coming on, Chase.
Thank you so much. I'm excited to be here. I always love watching your streams and listening to your podcast, so it's cool to actually be on.
Nobody believes me when you say that, but
no, the best thing is that you and often stream at like the weirdest hours. So I'd like wake up and be like, it's early in the morning and you're like playing a game. I'm like, that's perfect. That's amazing.
Adam Freefolk would come over at like 5:30 in the morning and he lived 45 minutes away.
Oh my gosh. Well, that's a niche market, but the morning people audience, they really appreciate it. So,
well, like I remember the first time I messaged him in, he was trying to get people to meet up with him at the store at like 11 a.m. And I was like, oh, I could play like really early if you're down to drive, blah, blah. And he's like, well, I get up at 3:30 every morning for work. I'm like, I get up at 3 every morning for work. This is awesome. So, yeah, those worked out. He hasn't been over in a while, but it was fun stuff.
Yeah.
And I think Dakota had come over a few times at some ridiculous hours, too. Just you got to get them games in, man.
Yeah, it's whenever that time's free, you're just jumping in and like, yep, I'm going now.
Yep. Like, oh, everyone's sleeping? That's when we got to do it.
not everybody, right? You know.
Yeah.
All right. So we wanted to talk to Chase today. Obviously, we're going to be talking some Song of Ice and Fire, but really get to know Chase the gamer, not just Chase the awesome content creator.
Oh, boy. Okay.
So, first off, obviously with COVID going on, how has it been for you, trying to get games in during COVID, working during COVID? I know you're a teacher.
Right.
You're one of our educators. So you've probably been stressed extremely.
Been a little crazy. We'll just say that.
With that. So, how's it been going for you during COVID?
It's been pretty rough. I'll be honest, but, we're adapting. And so we've been teaching in person since September. So that means I have to be really careful about limiting who I come into contact with because it's a possible vector source for that. So not a lot of in-person gaming going on. It has actually inspired me to try some other games to test different things out, trying to figure out TTS a little bit. Playing other games like Star Wars Legion. And I think I've played more Marvel Crisis Protocol online than I have in person at this point. But, trying lots of different options. Heck, I even tried with A Song of Ice and Fire to try to like set up like a grid and try and play like over a camera with somebody. Doesn't work that well. But so it's been challenging to say the least. Now, what's fortunate. Oh, go ahead. Yeah.
Oh, is it like formal chess? Like, I moved my halberdiers to Freefolk 7. And
see, when you say it, doesn't it sound like a good idea and that it would work? It doesn't really, though.
It absolutely does. I've thought about that, too. But then it's like, I don't think that works. Like, I don't think it would,
It's so much work for what it is.
Carl and Fabio do it once. Like,
he did it well.
A year or some odd ago, right?
Yeah. He made it work there, and I was inspired. But in the end, it's like the amount of time I'm putting in. It's like it's like a different game then, sort of. And I was like, I want to just play this thing I really enjoy, and I'm somehow like sort of changing the base structure of it in a way that makes it not what I really enjoy. So
at that point, just fired up on Tabletop Simulator and
exactly. Yeah. I just love one of the things I really like about gaming in general is I'm especially drawn to like the tactile nature of like the actual miniatures. You can play with online or you can play with even like cardboard standees. But for me, it's always something about like holding the 3D object itself that like just is part of the joy. So trying to like recreate that in as many ways as possible has been kind of the goal. But it's been challenging. So, I'm really excited for things to hopefully start getting better, fingers crossed, and get back into like the more traditional aspects of the game that I enjoy.
Yeah, absolutely. Same here. I know me and Carl, we've fortunate enough been able to play some more in person. I know during COVID here, we both have been, our jobs have necessitated us still working and basically being in person as much as possible. Yeah, definitely being able to get back to actually playing with the models. I think usually on my desk here, I keep like 2-3 sitting out all the time, either like trying to fiddle with them to paint them or just like I need to not only play on a computer.
That's been the good part of this, though, is that like I've actually been doing a lot of painting. And my buddy Josh, He's working from home all this time. And so in between meetings, he's been setting up and just painting stuff and like texting me throughout the day. Every day I get like, you know, three texts of like, hey, I just painted this new Brathian unit, or hey, I painted these, you know, hero box, or he's looking at some kill team stuff. And so it's been also inspiring me to kind of sit down and try and squeeze as much as I can in as well. And just enjoy that part of the hobby as well.
Awesome. What would you say is your favorite unit you've painted so far?
Oh man. Okay. That's a tough one. I really love my Free Folk miniatures. People might know that about me. I think that Cave Dweller Savages just look so cool. And that was a really fun unit to paint. I know they're maybe not as, you know, crazy or out there as other miniatures you can get in wargaming, but for me, something about them just looks like kind of visceral, and I loved it. The other one I enjoyed was the Free Folk Fen. I think I kind of like the idea of them more and how they should look. I struggle painting bronze, and so they maybe didn't come out as like cool as I envisioned them coming out, but they were definitely fun to paint. And then I've been also looking at like, you know, other miniatures, a Marvel Crisis Protocol, painting a lot of those. And it's such a fun switch to going from like painting like, you know, 68 Free Folk Raiders to painting like one Captain America, and trying to like really highlight, you know, and go for much more detail. And so, you know, I've got kind of spreading the love a little bit in that regard.
How about you, Dakota? What's your favorite unit?
I've actually stepped up and done a lot of painting so far. I don't know really what I could say my favorite is. I think maybe the Sentinels that I painted up are my favorite. I think I did their armor really cool. I just did wash over it, but I don't know. I think it turned out probably the best of what I can do for myself, because I'm not a great painter.
Honestly, as long as you didn't pick a Stark unit, I was going to.
Well, in that case,
no, you stop.
Man, so I'm nervous. I've got my Baratheon starter set is actually one of mine that's not painted, and I was like just a little bit nervous about like painting all that like yellow. Any tips for that, or how's that working out for you?
So for me, I've done it a few ways. I first tested on some Mountains Men, because I had a couple units of them. I was like, I'm gonna throw some yellow on them, and I did, you know, kind of the traditional, you know, like an orange up to a yellow, that build up, and it took a while, and I'm impatient. So then I went the contrast method, and they're awesome. I mean, it just sped everything up using contrast. Really, I know for myself, like all my warden, anything metal based, I obviously base coated them with just like a metal. I can't even think of what I use, like an aluminum, and then just did like the Wraith Bone over any part that would be yellow.
Okay.
Contrast. So, I mean, I cheat because I suck, but you know, I think they're turning out how I would like them.
Well, maybe I'll try and follow that method then, actually.
Yeah. The build up, I did okay with it. Like, you know, kind of the traditional way, but it's tough and it takes a lot. And then when you mess up a little bit, you're like, well, can't go back now.
Yeah. I cheated hard on the Baratheon starter. I think I painted the whole thing in like 8 hours of painting time. Mm-hmm. And that was with spending way too much time on the Sentinels, because I tried to do some cool yellow armor that just didn't work out at all. But I just used like a regular spray paint can of like a metallic paint, hit them all with that, and I was like, all right, anything that's gonna get yellow is gonna get painted white, then it's gonna get painted yellow, it's gonna get washed brown, and I'm gonna be done with it. Like, there we go. Painted starter box counts.
Well, that might be my goal for this upcoming February then, just get my Baratheons all good.
And once you paint them, you can pretty much just put them in the box forever and never worry about playing them and keep them nice.
They're not the faction I reach to play the most. So that might be the case. My buddy Josh really likes Baratheons, though, so that kind of covers us there.
I feel him on an interpersonal level for playing them, and I feel his struggle.
It takes a special kind of man to be able to play Baratheons, because they are underwhelming at the moment.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm just like, this is all I get, and this is how fast it goes? Like, oh, come on. Where's the... let's...
Yeah.
So I'm like, I'm a cavalry. They're fast, right? And I was like, well, they're faster.
They're fast-ish.
Fast.
They're fast in a bubble, you know? All right, so one thing, if we, not that we are, but so say we showed up at your house and we were like, hey,
okay, wait, what?
we're,
I can hear you from the other room. It's
like, why are you in my car right now?
Chase hears the ding dong in the background.
Surprise. But say we were showing up and we're gonna play a Song of Ice and Fire. What would the list that you'd be reaching for to have fun with? What would that look like?
Oh man. Okay. So this is maybe a cheat answer because they're not out yet. I'm really thinking a lot about the Greyjoys. Mm-hmm. And you know, I really want to get them, you know, pardon the pun here, but like get them on the table. I think they look so cool. And, you know, just to quell any rumors out there, you know, I'm not stopping playing Free Folk. Free Folk are amazing. But in a lot of ways, I think Greyjoy kind of capture a little bit of the essence of Free Folk. And that at least speaks to me. There's sort of like a visceralness to them, but their offensive capabilities, that seems so cool. And so I really want to get some games in it and build up some experience with them. So I'm just thinking like, how can I build like generic 40-point lists that will not necessarily be all about like winning the game, but will get me as like maximum experience with the units so that I can kind of have like that big foundation? And so I'm thinking I'm going to start off really focusing on just trying to play Asha Greyjoy a lot. I feel like she's a pretty a good entry point commander. You know, giving the morale bonuses, helping keep your units around a little bit longer, which maybe will give me a little bit more time to position and play. So I'm thinking just like basic Asha Greyjoy, you know, get your two Reaver, Ironborn Reaver units, you know, put a Reaver captain in one of them just so you can get used to like messing around and flanking a la, you know, Jarl from the Free Folk, jumping out there and, you know, hopefully not losing entire units. The House Harlow Reapers, I'm really interested in. And I want to like get experience playing them on the table and get used to, you know, how much support do they need? Right, with their damage capabilities, like, do I need to be putting a Warsworn in there for the sustainability, or can I just run them as is, like naked, and just, you know, save points for elsewhere? And then the Ironborn Bowman, I feel like, is going to be like such a key unit, you know, in a list. I just have one of those probably for now, just to get some experience with them. I wonder, can you do is like two Bowman lists going to be a thing, or is that kind of just like maybe spreading yourself a little too thin there? It's not really worth the token spread as much, or maybe that's the key all along. And then Iron Makers, the sculpts look so good. I want to definitely put them in. That's where you drop Asha. And I'll probably just drop, you know, Roderick Harlow, just do all the, you know, the Greyjoy NCUs and just play a bunch of games like that, trying to just use the Greyjoy stuff and get like a really good feel for it. And, you know, because I'm one of those people, like, I can theory craft things, but then like when I actually put stuff down on the table, I find that like some things just kind of click more than others. And so especially when like a faction comes out, like I just want to get as many games in with the pieces and be like, eh. Like, turns out I don't like the Iron Makers. They don't feel right, even though I could use them this way. They don't like play the way I want to play with it. So probably stuff that's like just been dominating my thoughts. It's like Greyjoy coming up here. Are you guys going to be picking them up, you think? Or
I mean, yeah. I'm pretty sure I will. I don't see any point in stopping now.
They've got you.
I kind of do that where I theorycraft down the rabbit hole and come up with something that it's like, oh yeah, when I try to do it on the table, you're like, oh, this takes 7 steps and I die right step 3. Like, I love the theory, but yeah, no, it's just not gonna work.
Yeah.
I've tried to not do that with the Greyjoys. I've been like, because one, we're looking at him through the 1.7 lens, so right, we don't know what the rest of the game looks like, which is fine. So I've tried to, like, I haven't built a list with him yet. I've just been like, nope, I'm just going to wait until I can try to see everything as a whole before I basically drive myself insane.
And that's the trap, right? Is like, you could start building lists and theorycrafting and like throwing in tons of neutral units and all these things, but really only the Greyjoy are going to be staying the same, right? Like, everything else is getting touched in some way.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah, I mean, jumping on that, yeah, I know I'll probably be getting them. I think they look cool. And yeah, Chase, too, I was kind of thinking the same thing, except instead of using Asha, I was just going to go full on with I think it's Victorian.
Yep.
It was just like offense. I was like, well, you know, I'll figure out what we can do with this.
I've played so much Tormund that I feel like I gotta, you know, I'm gonna work on a little bit non that sort of like charge in offense killiness.
Yeah, yeah. That's something that I enjoy doing, is being able to just go, yep, let's see if this works, and if it doesn't, I tried. But I too, I know you said running double Bowman. I really haven't started making lists until the NCUs were revealed, because then I was like, okay, we can get like a better picture without having to sprinkle any neutrals in. But off the double Bowman, I think a lot of the lists I've been making have been putting two in. I don't know if that's even the right call, but that's what I've been doing.
Yeah, so you know, that's what I'm trying to figure out too. And a lot of times I'll think of it as well as like, is it a unit that I want to double up when I'm like learning the faction? And then I can be like, oh, I can get rid of it. Like if I'm having a hard time getting pillage tokens, definitely want to have those. And sometimes you're just like, oh no, this is actually how you like, you definitely want to play this faction. But you know, maybe that's the way, maybe I will consider trying to throw some double units in there just to like maximize my efficiency. Cause I feel like that's going to be a linchpin unit. You know, being able to spread the panic pillage token. I mean, that's seems like it would be really, really useful.
Yeah. The one play that I thought with two running two of them is obviously, I think you maybe not even potentially worry about the pillage tokens with them, but you put that raid leader in and you just deploy them behind, and then all of a sudden they're re-rolling all their dice. Like they don't have a ton of dice, but it's just like, okay, they're shooting you in the back. And if you didn't bring the right stuff, you're going to have a hard time like spinning around to get them.
I have like a love-hate relationship with Outflank, so I have messed up many, many times with that.
Am I still on?
We're just contemplating how many. I was just going through all the times there in my head of the times that I messed up with Jarl here, so...
I know we've just straight up messed it up where we've done it just wrong. And I think, well, I don't even know if it was Outflank. I think it was with the Crow Killers from the campaign.
Oh, man.
Oh, yeah, when we tried that.
Yeah, I don't remember what happened, but I know I deployed them wrong like three times. And like, it was just like,
well, I do remember you deployed them like Jarl, but, and then we realized after like, three games like, oh, they deploy activated, like that's much different than what we were doing.
What do you guys think of that the beta campaign for that? Is there stuff that you would say like, hey, maybe this could be changed up, or because right, that's still like a in testing sort of thing, right, from my understanding?
Yeah, it's still on the CMON page, at least as far as I know, that it's in, and I'd feel confident saying that we've tested it much more than most people. We've played through it. I think we've only played it to completion once, right, Dakota?
Yeah, once before somebody's gotten mad. Yeah.
Right. We've played it like two games in, probably four times, and you're just like, okay, like you're snowballing. I'm just dying. This isn't working. I know the last time we played it, I think I had Night's Watch Crossbowmen and Ranger Trackers with plus one to hit, plus one dice. And it's like, oh, I'm shooting eight dice with Sundering, hitting on twos, and I have Pip in these guys, and there's just absolutely nothing you can do other than melt now.
Yeah, and playing Baratheons into that, it wasn't fun, because it's like, I just couldn't.
Oh, yeah.
I think you even had like a vet that was like three plus morale. Like, I don't know. It was just nuts. Cause like,
yeah, I think after... I had a unit of vets turned up with,
yeah,
I don't know.
Just... Yeah. So we've played the few, a few times, and we've kind of also been like throwing some like ideas around that we've been putting in to see how it would work. Like I know we've basically at one point restricted it where like the commander was in the special unit just because of like making it easier to swap them in and out. Cause we found it kind of hard with the rules with how commanders are supposed to come in and out of units, especially if one was like an NCU. We thought there was a little kind of wonkiness going on with that. I know we were discussing actually a way to change it the other day, Carl.
So one thing we did early on, and it never got flushed out to the point to actually use it, was each commander had their own unit. Instead of getting like the Crow Killers or anything, like I remember Khal Drogo got like a special unit of Screamers that Khal Drogo had to go in, and then Belwaz got like a special unit of Pikemen that Belwaz had to go in.
Okay.
And that when you change commanders, you just full on swapped out that unit. The other day we were talking the progress points, I think is what they're referred to, you know, the pass X amount of panic test, blah blah blah. Instead of using those to like buy abilities, you could use them to buy additional attachments for that unit.
Oh, that way, interesting.
That way, one, you're not buying anything that that faction doesn't have access to that just breaks things.
Mm-hmm.
Because Night's Watch crossbowmen shouldn't get plus one to hit. It, just, it shouldn't exist. So there was nothing there. And then we made it so, like, let's say I had Lannister Halberdiers with Barristan Salmeen. That was the unit that I list built with. It's one of my favorite units. So after the game, let's say they get one progress point. Well, now in the, or let's say they get three, and I want to buy 3 1-point attachments for that unit. I could put in a guard captain, an assault vet, and Preston Greenfield, but they would go in slots 3, 5, and 7. And then if they died, like, they died. That was it. I didn't get that attachment back.
Gotcha.
That's kind of where we're at right now. We haven't got to test that one.
That's yet. Actually really clever. I think that makes a lot of sense.
And then if it needs turned down, we're like, okay, you can add one attachment per rank. But and then that's another way that you could, like, knock your opponent down a notch if they get these snowballs going. Because if you kill that unit, now I just lost 3 attachments
out right.
of all my progress points. So it's not something we've got to play with yet, but we've put a decent bit of thought into that campaign, and we definitely think there's something there. I remember the one time we played it through, Dakota was running neutrals.
No, that was what I ran.
No, maybe the second. Neutrals. Okay, maybe it was the second time we played it. He ran neutrals and just cut them down on every unit, or not cut them down.
Oh, no.
Oh, God.
I did that with free folk.
Oh, God.
No, yeah,
the loser rank take wounds.
Yeah, that was cut them down. Yeah. Oh, no, not cut them down. It was go down fighting. It was go down
fighting. Oh, yeah, yeah.
Go down fighting in every unit. So if he had the combat zone, if I did anything, well, here's 7 wounds to go down fighting. Yeah, he had it on, like, all of his free folk units. So every time you touch them, oh, yeah, they're going to take 9 wounds, and so are you. So it's just like, yeah. Oh, this was brutal.
Yeah, so in that, like that one, like, was super.
That shouldn't exist in free folk because they die. So
we're discovering really all sorts of things here. It's like, this should really not exist.
Dying.
Yeah, I mean, I know for the campaign, we've done a lot more, like, kind of homebrew stuff just because we played it through with how it was set up just a few times. And, yeah, like, if you got, like, a crushing in the first or the second one, mm-hmm. the chances of you ended up just winning it overall it was almost guaranteed, just because the other person, they'd be behind in the progression points, their units wouldn't be as good, and then they would basically have to crush you to come back to win it.
Gotcha.
So it was just such a, you know, a big uphill battle to, like, come back and win if it wasn't close.
One other thing we talked about once that I don't think we tested this one yet either was that, like, let's say you lose by 8 points because we had it capped at 5. So if you lost it 4, you got to add 4 additional points to your army next round. If you lost by 8, you got to add 5 additional
points
to
your army.
I think we both felt like that could probably get out of hand, but we weren't sure. That was another thought we've had for testing it.
But it does seem like there needs to be some sort of, like, catch-up mechanic.
Something. Yeah, something. Because it seemed like, especially if you crushed game one, you were going to be looking good. Because they had 4 units and 2 of them got 1 progress point. And you have 4 units and 3 of them got 3 progress points. And it's like, oh, yeah, that's, you know, my opponent basically has me by about probably 10 points on the table, it feels like, at this point.
Gotcha. But it's still kind of a cool idea. I like that they're throwing stuff out there and kind of putting their feelers out to see what people think and testing things.
Yeah, that's one that hasn't really gotten any attention at all since it initially dropped. So we've been left to our own devices, kind of.
Yeah, I wonder if that'll be... I guess, does that fall under, like, organized play? Because that whole organized play theme seems to basically been put off for, like, a year, right? Because they originally announced it with, like, a trailer, like, a video. Mm-hmm. And then this year, everything was on pause. I'm wondering if, like, the next CMON Expo, if it'll be like, and now we're back. And this is where this actually fits.
And finally.
Just a year pause of, hey, finally, okay.
Here we go. Yeah, I don't know, maybe.
It's still in the playtest files and previews.
Yeah, okay. I'd like to see them. Yeah, I think just a few changes on it, but it was good. I think it's a good fun if you have. I know most of it's been like, oh, hey, I can come over in game all day. And it's like, well, we're going to just jump in and do this because we know we're going to play like four games.
And there's also something fun about like having it be like a little bit wonky, right? Where you're like, I have every free folk unit with like cut them down or, you know, last stand or, you know, any sort of crazy ability. Like that is a sort of fun in that too, I guess, for a while.
Right. But yeah, the giving each commander their own like cool unit was, and I don't remember how many of them we made.
Yeah, it got a little crazy because we even put it out to one of the other groups, the Northeast Ohio group, and we're like, hey, like, what would you guys like to see? Like, if you had a unit for X commander, what would it look like to you? And like, we got some pretty cool stuff back for it, but we were like, yeah, we can't do all of them. Like, we got like, I would say 5 to 10 back that we kind of like, all right, this is kind of like the base that it would be, but. It was right, weird, like, too, obviously, because we don't have like play testing. It was more like, all right, we're going to take like Night's Watch vets and then like tweak them just a little bit to make them like flavorful for, you know, Gior or something like that.
Right. Yeah. Like the way we put them out there was, you know, if you could make Jon Snow's perfect unit and make it basically like a 10-point unit, what would that look like? So things got turned up and there was some stuff where we looked at and we're like, that looks kind of crazy, but I kind of want to use it. So.
Right.
Well, that's awesome, man. If you guys make that a big thing, I think people would really enjoy that. They, you know, could send in submissions for ideas and then you could like kind of weed through them and be like, all right, people, like we need people to test this out. Like, is this Jon Snow unit too crazy or not?
Right.
I am going back to night shift in March, so I'm going to have lots of free time on my hands. Maybe we'll dig back into that.
Do it.
Okay. Well, while we're on subject, Chase, what commander would you pick and what would their perfect unit?
Okay. Oh boy. If they're doing the get to know Chase moment here. In the books, I thought Mance Rayder, when he has his like spear wives and they go to Winterfell, I thought that was such a cool portion. And, or was, I guess, was he technically able to bard at the point? Well, you know, so, you know, he's got his like little entourage there though. And, you know, like a cool, like a super specialist, like elite spearwife unit of like assassin sort of thing would be kind of cool. Seaman, if you were listening, there is a potential here for a character unit. I'm just saying, this could be a, like, you know, Bone Lord's Chosen sort of thing here. Just putting it out there.
Okay. So we got spearwives are currently a 4-point unit. So how would you turn spearwives up to a 10 pointer?
Oh my gosh. 10 point.
Turn them up to, yeah, that's what we did. We're like
10
like,
points. Okay.
Like some units, like Night's Watch veterans, well, it's not hard to turn them up to 10 points. They're already 8.
Spearwise, yeah, 4 point.
I get
a little bit
2.5 times the strength of this unit. Where does this go? And it gets dumb real quick.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. I guess the easy thing is to like boosting morale. That's like an easy one. Mm-hmm. I don't know. What's a keyword you could give him?
The thing is, he wouldn't need to get the boosting morale because Mance already has that.
Oh, you're right. He already, yeah.
So
right.
He's got that. You got to think about that too. I think the way you made it sound is you'd want the, what is Jaime's assassinate little thing?
Like Ygritte.
Oh, yes. Assassinate. Yes.
Like the unit would have that. I think you'd want that in there.
Yeah.
Probably the character. What have we seen on the new, skirmishers, that agile, the -1 to hit kind of thing?
Oh, right? Yeah, getting hard to hit. Yeah, agile would be amazing. What could be I wonder if it's, I always thought they were, it's cool the idea of like crude spear, like having an ability off the charge, but I always felt like crude spear wasn't cool enough, not for a 10-point unit. What kind of bonuses can we give off the charge here? We give out tokens, I don't know, critical blow, maybe precision, I don't know. Not critical blow and precision though. That would be
You could give them some sort of, what am I trying to think of here? Almost like a, like basically like units outside of long or outside of like short range can't even see them. Like if you're not in short range, like you can't charge them, you can't shoot at them. Like,
dude, that's an interesting idea.
Like they're basically like they're hiding in the snow.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Something like that.
Interesting.
Or maybe outside of 9 inches. If you're outside of 9 inches, like you physically cannot see them. You can't charge them. No devastating impact. You can't shoot with long range. No stone thrower.
Right. Yeah. Huh. What a cool idea for like a new keyword or mechanic. Well, that's definitely got to be in like the list of cool abilities then for right. that campaign. Yeah.
Boom. Hmm. I think we might have just made Spearwives 10 points, boys.
Oh, yeah.
But yeah, so that was kind of our like, man, what if every commander had it? And then it turned into, all right, let's each pick four commanders, make a special unit, and then we'll pick two and try to play it. And
oh, that's a lot of fun, though. Yeah. Man. Just got to make some sort of spreadsheet and keep track of all this.
I think I have a file on my laptop where I had about half a dozen of these. And I like went in and photoshopped the actual unit card so it looked legit and, you know, gave them special names and those kinds of things.
This sounds like it's got to be like a Rome if you got them, like community initiative here.
Whew.
You know, maybe on the night shift when you switch up. Yeah,
right. Your time. Maybe we will. Maybe we'll get it ready for
no pressure, no pressure. But you've got something awesome here, basically, is what I'm saying.
Okay. Let's all right. Out of Chase's fantasy land here.
Of 10 the last points time someone let me get a wish, things went very bad. So I'm we'll move from there.
All right. What do you got next, Dakota?
What do we have next here? Really so let's change gears a little bit. Obviously we've been talking a lot of song. I mean, that's kind of one of the main games that we're playing right now. What other types of games though are you really into playing? Really, if you could give me like three, what would be three other favorite games you're playing right now, and then like what makes them awesome to you? Like why are you drawn to them?
Sure. So I think for war games, you know, it has not been a great year for war games for me, but Star Wars Legion is a game I'm really into. That's probably what I play the most competitively. I do a lot of traveling for like the rally point qualifiers, et cetera. Out in here in New England, it's like you can drive 6 hours and you can get to like, you know, basically, you know, three different states. So it's easy to travel around to different places. For me, you know, in general, not even just Star Wars Legion, but, you know, for a game to really catch my eye, it's got to have just a few basic things. So it can't just be clever. It also has to have that, like that fun factor. And for me, sometimes having like a thematic layer can really capture that. You know, I get to play Star Wars and you see like an AT-ST on a table. You're like, whoa, this is cool. What's going on? And it's got to be accessible. So, you know, I think one of the things that can be interesting about wargaming is that as a hobby, it can be a little bit daunting to get into. And so if you want to get other people interested in sharing this hobby with you, like we want to make friends and bring people in, some games are not so easy to do that. And I think, you know, Song of Ice and Fire, why that's like my favorite game is because it hits everybody, right? You can, it's, you know, it's a game that was a war game that was also really kind of pitched and targeted towards board gamers as well to kind of bridge this gap. You can just buy stuff, open it and start playing, or you can paint it up. Star Wars Legion is like kind of that next step up where it's like there is assembly. And as long as you're not like playing droids, the assembly isn't so bad. And so it's, you know, you can start figuring out, okay, how do I assemble miniatures and paint them? And then the rules are just really clean and fun. I think, you know, FFG and now soon to be AMG, I think, has taken over. You know, they had a lot of experience with like X-Wing and building kind of competitive games. And I think Star Wars Legion has like all of that. And so for me too, it's like, I can only have so many certain types of games in my life and, you know, Song of Ice and Fire, tray movement games, like that's gotta be it for me. Like I'm all in there. Star Wars Legion, I get my lasers and Star Wars stuff and, you know, the order tokens and the way you play it, it's really good. Do you guys play Star Wars Legion at all by any chance?
No, I don't. I've looked at it a little bit. And I can definitely get on board with it. The one thing that I always, when I was trying to pick it up to learn it, since I know it's kind of that next step, is the dice. When you'd see
them
playing and then it's like they roll it and they're like, this dice goes to this now. And I'm like, what? Like,
yeah.
Just so, why isn't it a D6 that hits?
Like, that's an FFG thing. So there's two things you've got to come to terms with if you play. And this is like FFG is kind of having this move now to Atomic Mass Games, who's going to focus exclusively like on these war games. But FFG is like really known for, you know, their X-Wing, like their specialty dice like that you got to use. And then the other thing is like, you usually end up like buying like two core sets is like the best option. Mm-hmm. Once you kind of get used to those ideas, you know, the rest kind of falls in the line. But yeah, the dice are a little bit weird. You know, they could have just been D8s to be honest. Right. But they got to have fancy little graphics on them, I guess.
Yeah. I'm a huge Star Wars fan. So obviously I'm drawn to it that way. So if you had to, we'll spin off that. How would you rank the Star Wars movies? Because you're obviously a fan.
Oh my gosh. This is such a loaded question. So I have to confess, one of my favorite things about playing Star Wars Legion is I actually drive out to a store just to play Star Wars Legion called Sarge's Comics in New London, Connecticut. And one of my favorite things is there, you know, go up there once a week and we basically have this discussion like every Friday. And things change and move, but everyone's got very strong opinions. So I'm hesitant to even jump in here. But I guess I'll start with, and this might date me a little bit. You know, the original trilogy is, I think, kind of the pinnacle of Star Wars. But that's because that's, you know, what I grew up on.
Yeah.
There's a definite like age gap suddenly where there's like a people that are, you know, maybe 6 to 7 years younger than me. And they're like, no, it's all about like Clone Wars is the best, like the original prequels. Sure. But, you know, not so much for me. You know, there's this weird thing when we're talking about like, what does a Star Wars movie feel like? And for me, you know, I think there are probably some storyline elements that are like, maybe the writing isn't the best, et cetera. But Rogue One to me felt like Star Wars. Like when I saw it, at least like the second half was just like, you know, pretty like nonstop amazing. That felt like, that really kind of like reinvigorated me about Star Wars in general. So, you know, I'd probably say the originals, you know, you could say Empire Strikes Back is maybe there up towards the top, but you know, A New Hope, certainly maybe Empire Strikes Back, Return of the Jedi is pretty good. I watched it a lot as a kid. I don't know if it holds up as well now going back. Also negative points. My wife is like terrified of like those Ewoks, because as a kid she watched it and was like, they're teddy bears that like are scary, not a fan. So maybe that drops it down a little bit, but Rogue One is definitely up there in like my top tiers of those. We've had many discussions about the newer movies. I'm not sure how I really feel about those. It didn't feel like the Star Wars I knew.
You don't have to address them if you don't want to.
Let me just say this. The last movie, the most interesting thing about the movie was everything except for the plot. Like in the first opening scene, there's like people getting killed on Mustafar and they're like, oh, and like you read some other thing. And I was like, oh yeah, that was Kylo Ren killing like Darth Vader cultists that were like worshiping Darth Vader. And it's like, what? Like, that's interesting. Like, why is he there killing those guys? Like, tell me about that. Like, that's cool. Like, let's go explore that part of the movie. But it was like, you know, a 6-second montage in the beginning. And like, you know, the actual plot of the movie just, I don't know. there were some issues.
I will confess. I'll first off confess. I haven't actually seen the two latest ones. If I
explained it to you, you wouldn't believe it. And when you
honestly, I've seen some stuff about them, and I was just like, I'm not gonna do it. I'm not gonna break. I don't want to shatter that ceiling for me. You know. I think your ranking's pretty spot on there. I mean, I feel like in the original trilogy, obviously they're the best, straight up. I think you could put any three based off kind of the style of movie. Like if you were one with like having that big, awesome climactic ending, A New Hope's probably your favorite. If you're the one where you like the bad guys kind of winning a little bit, Empire Strikes Back is up there because, you know, they kind of win in that one. And then obviously kind of having just like the big set piece battles.
Yeah.
Are you kind of the Return of the Jedi? So it's kind of whatever flavor you like where you can put those. And then Rogue One, I know you mentioned that one a little bit. Yeah, that one was awesome. That one kind of reinvigorated. It was almost like a Star Wars war movie a little bit, I thought.
Yeah, it was the actual Star Wars movie with the war part. Yeah, like, oh yeah.
It was pretty cool. And then, yeah, we can, I mean, obviously you kind of get the rest where it's, you know, the prequels and then the new ones.
And I think a lot of it comes down to like what you saw at what age in your life. You know, I know somebody who like didn't see Star Wars until they're like in their 30s and they sat down to watch it and they're like, what? Like,
so
is that someone here on this podcast with us?
So why is Carl wrong for have never seen Star Wars?
Hey, I've almost finished season one of The Mandalorian. Come on.
Carl, what? Oh my gosh. I have like a feeling of like empathy coming for you. Like what were you doing as a child? You must have been doing something way cooler than Star Wars, huh? Star Trek, was it? It was Star Trek.
No, I don't do Star Trek either.
Did I start a war here or something?
No, I was just
no offense to the Star Trek people out there.
I was like, how happy are you to go to have someone talk Star Wars with? Because that's not me. I don't know.
Yeah, that's never been Carl's thing. I know.
So what's like the parallel universe you were existing in? Because like Star Wars was a predominant part of my childhood.
Man, you know, I really don't know what I was doing not watching Star Wars, but I wasn't watching Star Wars, so.
Fair enough.
Yeah,
Indiana Jones, is that a?
No.
Well, I know we were big like Lord of the Rings fans.
Okay.
Big Lord of the Rings fan. I was just watching Return of the King the other day. I was like, oh, this movie's so good.
And really, too, if you think about the original trilogy and Lord of the Rings, they're very similar. I mean, like, obviously the plots are completely different. Like, they have two separate goals. But really, if you follow the movies, you can almost put them all in the same. Like, Two Towers would be almost equivalent to A New Hope because they have the big battle, climactic battle at the end. The Fellowship is kind of that Empire Strikes Back where you're like, huh, like, where are we going with this one? We don't know. Like, it's kind of starting it out. And then obviously, like, Return of the King, it has like three endings, but it's like just a bunch of big battles. That's essentially what that movie is. So,
you know, and with Disney Plus, I've been very, very close to starting them many times, but then I forget and don't.
Yep. So all you really need to know is that Han shot first. There is no McClunky and, you know, all that sort of stuff.
I saw something on Facebook the other day that they were talking about Mandalorian and whatever Bill Burr's character is. And they're like, he did better with this character with 3 minutes of screen time than they did with three movies.
Yeah,
or
they're definitely. Like,
that doesn't make me want to watch them. Really,
they're definitely building it out more. It's been really cool to see that. I think what I've come to realize is that I like Star Wars as like a genre, I guess. And I got to just like come to terms with like, there's going to be Star Wars movies that like I don't like, but like the genre of Star Wars, like, is something like that I enjoy. And I like it when it's like a little bit more grounded. Like, they're doing those, they're going to be coming out with the High Republic. And, you know, it's like more Jedi centric. And I was like, you know, I'm not as excited as the Jedi part as maybe I am about like the Mandalorian or the Book of Boba Fett. That seems kind of really appealing. Kind of like low magic, low Jedi settings. Mm-hmm. But we could go on. I could go on for a while here. And I hope, you know, if any of my buddies are listening who talk Star Wars every week, they'd be like, you didn't even get into it. You didn't even get started. We have lots of opinions. And the best thing is, like, the group I'm with, we've got people that are like super Clone Wars. We've got some people that love like the new trilogies. They're thinking like The Last Jedi was like the best of all the Star Wars movies, which, you know, I don't necessarily feel. And so there's like, we get a lot of voices going. We have a lot of fun talking about it.
Yeah,
I think I probably enjoy that more than Star Wars. It's just like talking to people about.
So when you go back to your game store, this is going to be like me and Carl just like went up to the tree and started shaking it just to stir that.
Oh, 100%. Like,
what do you mean?
Let me just put it there. I went up there just to buy some stuff and buy some paints to kind of support the store. And I ended up talking with like one of the managers there for like an hour and a half about Star Wars. Just, and I was like, oh, this is what I've been missing for like the past couple months.
Right.
Anyhow, whew. So yes, as you were saying, Star Wars Legion is a great game I enjoy, and I do also partake in some Star Wars movieage.
Nice, perfect. Legion 2, I mean, we'll get into that. Well, yeah, what are some other games you're playing right now?
Yeah, so then some other games that I think are really interesting. I'm not a big card game player, and this is not really a card game, but it's this game called Crystal Clans. I don't know if you guys have heard of it. And so what it basically is it's like you buy a deck that's like an army, and there's a small gridded board, and you're trying to attack the other person's fort, and there's like three zones you got to control, and basically it's like a little mini war game you play with cards. And so the cool thing about it is it's kind of like a war game that you're playing with cards, but it's really quick. And you basically, you know, you pay your like whatever $14, you buy an army, and it's so easy to travel with. And so I've got a buddy who's down in New York City, and if we go to like conventions, or if he drives up or takes a train up here to meet up, he'll just grab a deck and we'll throw out a board and we'll just play it. And it's just like a quick, fun game. And so, you know, that's one of the things that's really not so good about wargaming is you can't really easily travel and set up and get games. Like, you need a big table space. You need all this real estate essentially, and you don't for this game. And so it's like one of those weird games where it's like, it's out there, it's really fun, you know, it's not one you like, you know, have a whole lifestyle around, but it's just like one you have in your collection. And yet, like, I feel like nobody talks about it, or like nobody plays it, or and it's just, you know, one I would definitely recommend checking out if you're into, maybe if you're just looking for like a quick travel war game style experience. And then the other thing is, like, I've been looking at a lot of historicals. Right before COVID hit, I went in on Mortal Gods from Footsore Miniatures. And historical gaming, I think, is, and this is like my uneducated opinion, I think it can be really daunting to like get involved in. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think they need a little bit more of like that A Song of Ice and Fire approach, where it's like, you know, how do we get people into the hobby? And so Mortal Games is kind of like that game for historical wargaming. The only reason I might, you know, be a little bit hesitant, if you're a really heavy A Song of Ice and Fire player, is there might be a lot of overlap there, where you're like, oh, this game has like, you know, your little trays, you can form up, you can do things that are a little bit more maybe in the historical vein, but there's a lot of things that like have echoes of what A Song of Ice and Fire is doing, but in the historical context. So like, A, it makes a cool like bridge game to get in there if you're starting to play historical games. But you know, if you've got all the A Song of Ice and Fire units and you play this all the time, you might be playing it and be like, oh yeah, there's a pretty good amount of overlap here. Like, it might not have the same luster as someone coming in like straight from a non-wargaming background, or just looking for another cool historical to play. And it's Immortal Gods is ancient Greece, if you guys aren't aware of it.
Yeah, I have actually I know you've obviously posted some Immortal Gods. I've looked at it a little bit. I know one thing for me is, I mean, I'm not huge fan of the time period, but you know, mm-hmm. I saw it, I was like, okay, like those models are cool, maybe not my flair. They use more of the like the diorama type style, don't they? Like, you don't actually remove models on that, correct? Or am I wrong?
You can technically, but you don't really need to. Yeah. And so you can just, you have like a wound die that you can put next to it.
Right. I know, because that's what, like, I know for myself, which is real weird, and where I'm not a huge fan of like the diorama stuff. Anytime you see them where it's like, oh, this is just the tray and how it sits, it's like, man, I want to pull the dude off and be like, I don't know. But yeah, and then the card game, I haven't heard of that one before, but that's definitely one to check out. What was that called again?
It's Crystal Clans. It's like a really, it's not a, you know, not a big investment. Mm-hmm. You'll end up maybe buying like two or three more decks than you thought you would, because you're like, oh, this is kind of neat. And like, for one quick purchase of a deck, like, I can have a whole new army I play. Mm-hmm. But like, literally, I basically only play this game at like when I'm traveling to conventions, or like, you know, traveling to meet someone and we can't like, you know, bring an army and set up like a 4x4 or 6x4 table, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. It does seem pretty quick. Obviously, I haven't played card games since I was a little kid, and you know, you have your Pokemon cards and you're
right, and maybe it's like
else, but yeah, it's something that's, it definitely can scratch an itch for some people out there.
Yeah, it's something just to check out, maybe at the very mm-hmm. least, like, just watch a like let's play video and be like,
mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. Then kind of circling back to the historicals, I know I think you've turned us onto this one also, was we've been looking at Baron's War quite a bit. I know I just got the rule book coming in, but yeah, I reading through it, I feel that same way where it's a little daunting. I know I read the rule book, which it's like 140 pages, or I read through most of it. I shouldn't say I read all of it, but it's definitely got some meat to it. And that is a historical, that's a skirmish type game,
right?
For you guys out there. So it's not really the trays or anything. It's a little different, a lot lower model count.
So I think these guys are going to be a thing. I think Footsore Miniatures is one of those companies that's growing, and they're making some smart choices. So I feel like, and maybe it's like not necessarily how they're envisioning it, but this is how I see it. Mortal Gods is like a really good accessible entry point to historical gaming. Baron's War is more complicated. It's like that next step up.
Yeah.
But if you got in with Mortal Gods and you're playing that for a while and you kind of like maybe exhausted that as a game system, it's a jump, but it's not like too crazy, but I could see you kind of moving on to this as a more complicated mm-hmm. and maybe what might be more appealing to like the more traditional, like really experienced historical gamers. But it seems like a really cool system. I've just got the rule book and I'm just like reading through it now. I haven't gotten through all of it yet. But it's definitely caught my attention. And the other thing is, like, this is definitely something you could probably play with your Song of Ice and Fire miniatures. Like, yeah. In the meantime.
mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. I know when we first saw it, I don't know, for whatever, for me, if I see something and it like clicks, like you watch it and you're like, I am in, I'm on board. Where do I need to go? I know you posted a video of it and I watched it and I was like, yeah, totally. This speaks to me. I don't know why it does, but it spoke to me. But yeah, reading through the rule book, it's pretty daunting. I wouldn't say pretty daunting. It's a lot more to it where you're thinking, and there's a lot more rules baked in on like morale and that type of stuff, which I think it'll be a fun kind of change up. And yeah, we're totally going to use our A Song of Ice and Fire miniatures, because I think this is the game is set up for like 28mm scale.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not, what are Song ones?
They're a little bit bigger. They're like, yeah, in the 30s, I think. But if everybody's, you know, if you're all agreeing to play at the same scale.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It works.
Yeah, so we've really been, I mean, I should say, I know I have been, I don't know how much Carl's been. I know I've been reading through it, and it looks fun. There's a lot.
Watch out, Carl. You're going to get sucked in.
I think he's getting sucked in. Because I know he's been looking at the PDF that I have also to be like, all right, how can we both get in and play this?
Right, and that's the best thing, right? You can go online, you can order the rule book, but you can also grab a PDF version or both. And you know, flip through her stuff, and it's pretty reasonably priced.
Yeah, no, it was I don't remember the price off the top of my head. It wasn't very much, but it was for the full printed rule book and then the PDF version. It wasn't that much. I can't think of the price of it right now off the top of my head. But it's awesome. I think it's got everything too that you really want. Like there's army building, there's terrain, it's kind of got the whole gambit of, if you're wargaming, it's all the stuff that you want to do. And it's yeah, it uses a bunch of different dice, and it seems like it'll be exciting.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely out there, something to just to keep on your radar.
Yeah, definitely a radar thing. So with kind of with those other games that you mentioned, how do they, are they more of terrain games where you're going to have a little bit more terrain on the table than A Song of Ice and Fire? Because I know,
yeah,
A Song of Ice and Fire, it's one of those games where you play it, and I know we've done it. We set up like terrain pieces, but then you end up pulling like the 3D models off. And
right.
It's kind of a flat game. Are these ones more like built up terrain setting?
They are, for sure. And that's been actually really hard for me, because my terrain collection is not as strong as I would like it to be, my personal one. That's like one of the things I came to realize pretty quickly, was that when I can't go to the store regularly to play, you know, and I want to play other games besides A Song of Ice and Fire, I've got to do a little bit more legwork to get my home terrain set up looking good. Now, luckily, my store has actually let me borrow some terrain for some videos and things, but you know, that's something I'd love to figure out also for A Song of Ice and Fire, like really figuring out how to better incorporate 3D terrain. Because I think it's such a good way to like catch people's eyes when you're playing the game and like pull people in, but it often does just get in the way. Like if there was a cool way that you could just like, you know, I just could maybe spend more time and design like exact footprint templates of the terrain I have, because usually like my forests like don't quite fit or, but yeah, yeah. So terrain's a definitely a big part of those games.
Yeah, for Song, I know Carl, he's done some where he's used the template, like,
yeah,
like he's taken like a piece, because obviously we have like three sets of all the terrain, and he's taking a piece and like, oh, this will be a low wall, I'll flip it upside down so the low wall's on the bottom so you know what it is, and then he'll just build a low wall on that piece so it'll fit, and like we can put it over another one, but then obviously it usually gets moved, so it's kind of goes away. But with the with your terrain collection you have, are you a terrain builder, or are you one where you're gonna go out and you're gonna see something cool and like kind of get the cool piece, or?
Yeah. So I have made terrain in the past, but I haven't really made any big pieces in the last like 2 years at least. Actually that's not true, but you know, so I did actually purchase a Star Wars Legion terrain piece from Legion Terrain, which is really cool, like a centerpiece of like a downed big AT-AT walker, which is awesome. But you know, there's so many cool things you can do to make terrain. Actually, Carl's stuff that he made, now that you mentioned this template ones, I did see those. Those are actually like pretty fantastic. For me, a lot of times I'm just like following certain YouTube channels that like are about making terrain. I don't know if you guys know, Jay, I think it was by like Jay Oddity, but he's got Terrain Made Easy on YouTube. Mm-hmm. He's got some really great videos for like building stuff up. And so I've actually like made smaller set things based on his stuff. There were some ones for making like, some urban terrain, was like, pallets and like, you know, barrels and things like that, that I was trying to get ready for like Marvel Crisis Protocol. But you know, terrain is definitely something on my list to kind of do. Oftentimes it's more just like, I'm not collecting and saving the pieces that I need to be doing. So when they're like, you can use these like things you find around your house or like common items. And I'll be like, oh, I recycled all those. Like I really need to be saving those.
Right. Yeah. I know for me, like I'll be honest, I don't have any terrain. It's like, all right, I need to start maybe making some and getting some. And then, yeah, we resided our house over the summer, and then it's like, oh my God, I could have used all that leftover foam board. Like we had, you know, garbage cans full and we threw it away. And now it's like, I would go for like one 2 foot by 2 foot piece. And I would just be happy right now. But, but yeah, I know for me, like I looking to maybe get into making some of it. Just that way I could kind of customize it how I want to be, which seems fun. What would be kind of like a tip for any terrain builders out there? Since you said you made some, what would be like your tip for? If you had a tip.
I mean, definitely if you're starting off just making terrain for the first time, like maybe set some reasonable expectations. even following Terrain Made Easy, some of their tutorial videos, like I basically had to do it like twice. And the second time I was like, oh, now it works. Like it is as easy as the video now that I've tried it twice. It really just comes down. You're learning an entirely new skill. And, just like it's hard to paint miniatures when you're starting out, like sometimes those skills can transfer over, but you're kind of working with a different beast. But really just like look for everyday objects. And it can be as simple as just like, you know, a cardboard box you can cut out and just like, take the cardboard and just cut it and layer it on top of itself and make a small hill that way. Using cans, things like that. There's like so many everyday objects. And, go on Facebook, go on YouTube, find a terrain channel, find a terrain group, and just see what people are doing. And you can get a lot of inspiration that way.
Yeah, I get yelled at by my wife a lot where I'm like, what is this doing in the garbage can? She's like, what do you mean? And I'm like, no, set this out. What are you going to do with it? I don't know yet, but I have a box for all of these things.
Yeah, your stuff was awesome too.
Like this box will probably just get thrown out when we move someday. But in the event that it doesn't, I have a box filled with random stuff that I might be able to turn into something.
That's the danger. That's the warning sign, I should say. You're going to end up with a box. Like I haven't made terrain in like a while, and I definitely have a box full of like, you know, big terrain pieces. I've got a box of some remnants there that that was supposed to be trash. It's just like I feel like what happens to me is I end up recycling the stuff that I really wanted and I end up keeping stuff that like I don't actually end up using.
You're like, oh, this is actually trash.
Right. You know what I mean? Like, yeah, I've saved trash and I recycled the stuff that was good. And it's like, but you know, there's maybe a life lesson in there somewhere.
Okay, so I'd step away for a few minutes, but in passing, I think I heard something about Baron's War. Did I already miss that conversation?
Oh man,
you're gonna be playing this soon, basically.
Yeah, you're getting.
It's been decided.
I mean, that's one thing, because Dakota texted me earlier and he was like, "All right, let's go 1 to 10. How excited are you for Baron's War?" And I'm like, "Well, I'm like 4 pages into the rule book out of 140."
You've been spoiled with a song where you'd be like, I'm 4 pages in, like, I'm basically done.
Right.
Like, you're like, yeah, I got this. I'm ready to go play.
As reading, I've been tricked.
I'm like, I really like the idea of individual models because this is the first, a song is the first, war game I've played. So I haven't played anything with individual models yet. I'm like, I like the concept and it looks like the table has like some buildings, a lot more trees. Like there's a lot more stuff on the table and I've come to enjoy making terrain. So I'm like, yeah, I'm like an 8 just looking at it. And for the fact that with already having so much song stuff, the price of entry is relatively low, at least for now, until I want to get, specific models for the game.
Yeah, no. I think it's going to be a thing for sure. And the cool thing about this is like, I always look for, I don't know if you call them, but I call them like companion games, but like I can be playing A Song of Ice and Fire and this can be another game that I can play in my off time just for fun that provides something different. Like and it's kind of keeps me like refreshed in both games because I can mess around and try some other things out and always come back to the game that I really love, but there's not as much overlap.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's I know I've talked about this a couple times, but this Jurassic World miniatures game.
Oh man.
That the Kickstarter is supposed to deliver back in September, and you know, COVID things.
Yeah.
So it, we're looking at like real soon, like next couple weeks is supposed to start shipping. It's there's no dice. It's like a mixture of a deck building game and a miniatures game.
I know, it's like a hex based system. Was that?
Yes.
Okay, I know what you're talking about. Yeah.
But I don't know if you've ever played like Legendary.
Mm-hmm.
Or some people have played, what's one? Oblivion or Munchkin. Those kind of deck building. I think that's what this is. I really don't know. I kind of just got on Kickstarter one day and was like, or I think I just Googled it. I'm like, are there any dinosaur miniatures game? Because my kid loves dinosaurs. And I was like, well, this is, you know, it looks like a match made in heaven. And I'd actually missed the Kickstarter by about 12 hours.
Oh.
So I'm like going deep into the company, emailing people like, hey, please, someone please like let me in.
You're on like some list now, you realize.
I emailed like five different people that are, you know, I don't know where I found their name on connected to the game, but I'm like, I don't care. What's worse, they're gonna say no. Well, someone did send me to like a European site that it was still live on, basically like a European version of Kickstarter, and I could still get all the pledges and stuff, and I had like a few days. So I was so excited because oh, this thing's been live for 45 days and I missed it by 12 hours. Like, this sucks. And then I was so happy and I found it and I'm signing up and my wife's like, well, how much is it? And I think I'm like 150 euro. She's like, how much is that? I don't know. I'll find out when I check out. I'm not
That's
sure.
Good. Right That's now. A new pro tip is just tell people like, how much did you spend on miniatures? Like, well, in euros, it would be.
Right. Which I think euro was a bit more.
Oh, that's good. Then it was like, you know,
I think it was like $135 or something. I don't remember, but I got like the all in. Yeah, the spared no expense pledge. It was 130 euro. I don't know what that comes out to. I don't know if I spent more or less, but whatever it was. But that's a nice little cheat right there. Like, how much is that? I don't know. I'll find out when I check out. I'm not worried about it. I want this game. Like,
hold it up now. I'm looking at the miniatures in it. Those are pretty fantastic.
Yeah, I'm real excited. We'll see. I'm hoping my airbrush is the key to victory and can make up for all of my painting shortcomings. Yeah, it's a deck. Right. So I'm like, oh, there's no dice. Like, and then I saw it's a deck building, and I'm like, oh, okay. I like deck building games. I like Oblivion and Legendary and stuff. And I was like, yeah, sure, we'll try it. So. But yeah, oh, I'm hoping that's my little change of pace. It's played on, I think, a 3x3. So obviously, like my 4-year-old won't be able to, but he'll at least be able to sit at the table, and then I can make my wife play. Because she sat down to play Song once, and it didn't go well. So we've never revisited that.
Gotcha.
She was one of those people like, can we just play without the cards? And I was like, never mind.
Yep.
You can't play without the cards, so no. But yeah, I'm hoping that's kind of my good change of pace. And then on top of it, like Baron's War, when we can.
Yeah.
Because I also like the setting for that.
Are you going to do any content for Jurassic World or Baron's War? Like, I'd love to hear your guys' thoughts on it further, especially when you get it. Like, maybe some unboxing or something. I'd love to see some more details about it.
I think I will definitely do an unboxing for Jurassic World. Because the most of what's out there is like everything's put out in French first, and then mm-hmm. it's you get the English translations kind of later. So I'm like, oh, well, I can, you know, take a stab at being the English guy.
Yeah, 100%.
So we'll see. But I mean, I'm sure I'll make Dakota play it at some point in time, and we'll stream it, see what comes of it.
That's what we were all talking about. Star Wars. You were doing Jurassic Park, Jurassic World, all that stuff.
Mm-hmm. Right. There we go.
Yeah.
All right. Not to date myself here, but total side tangent. Did you guys ever happen to see Dino Riders as a kid? Does that ring a bell? Oh man. Never mind. I outed myself as an old
Dino Riders.
It was some like really weird kids, like animated TV show, like, you know, back with like He-Man and stuff like that. But it was like dinosaurs with like laser guns and stuff. And I'm like, that would be the perfect That'd be like, if that game ever came out, if someone got the rights to that game, give me my dinosaurs with laser beams. That's what I want.
It does look pretty cool. I'm looking at some of the images right now. Like, okay.
It's like if you took like a 10-year-old and you were like, what would be the coolest thing ever? And it'd be like, that's what they would come up with.
Right.
But anyhow, little digression there.
No. Yeah, I don't recognize any Dino Rider stuff here. I don't.
There we go. Right.
Oh, yeah, that would be amazing. I'm totally in. That T-Rex has a rocket launcher on his side right there.
Yeah, so they're like the bad guys had like mind control helmets they put on the carnivorous dinosaurs, and the good guys were like, I don't know, it was like the power of friendship or something, and they like Rockyosaurus to like carry them with like missile launchers.
The power of friendship, as you
know, one of those things, just like nothing makes sense, but you're like, okay, like just how do I get that thing with the missile launchers? Like, that's what I want. Velociraptors with machine guns, please.
Yeah, this article is from 2015. It says that it might be coming to the big screen, but it looks like...
What? Okay, well... Okay. Well, sorry, I've taken us on a weird path here, but now I'm excited again. Let me give me something on my
future. All we got to do is buy a second Jurassic World the Miniatures game, and then...
There we go.
And we can figure this out real quick.
Yeah, there we go. I mean, how is that not just printing money, right? Make this game, somebody.
Right, yeah.
Somebody's got to see this out there and be like, yes.
Like if there's a TV show that everyone loved in a fantastic world, and they're like, let's do 10 seasons, and there's two jackass directors. And they're like, let's do eight. Oh.
Too soon. That's too soon.
I still watch that last episode from time to time, and just I'm just angry, and I can't sleep.
Yeah, don't do that to yourself, man.
I can't. I rewatch it, and then I get to season 5, and I'm like, all right, well, that was fun. Let's just start at the beginning again. Why don't we?
I'm excited to see where the books go and how maybe lessons learned or different ideas that were envisioned from the beginning, and see where things go. But patience.
Patience is a necessity. But all right, what else are we talking about here? Covered terrain. I don't know. Is there anything else that you wanted to talk about, Chase? We've kind of gone off on so many different tangents. We've talked Star Wars and the movies. We've talked Dino Riders.
Yeah, sorry about that, everybody. I got a little off topic there. I just want to say, like, you know, thank you so much for having me on. You know, I've always really appreciated your content. And like I said, especially those like early morning streams, no pressure. But if those happen up again, I would always appreciate that. And you know, you guys do such great work, and you know, thanks for being such like positive and supportive members of the community. I know especially I think it was like, did it come out on Thanksgiving? You had like maybe it was your November podcast, the most recent November one. You're talking about the visions and the flames. Like, I was listening to that one, and I just really, really enjoyed it. And like, you guys were doing such a good job of like breaking down like what was in the article and like making predictions on the things that were being like used as the art. And I was like, oh man, like this is actually really cool. And you know, I don't know, it just got me really into it. So, you know, I just appreciate what you guys are doing. And you know, thanks for your support. You guys have been really supportive of me, and you know, keep doing what you're doing. I love this stuff.
Yeah. This is a friendship that blossomed over the articles.
Oh my gosh. Yeah, you're right.
And I remember when you first posted, like, we're looking for people, and I'm like, all right, anything, I don't care. So I'm like, I'm going to pretend like I play Night's Watch. And I message Dakota. I'm like, I think they're still looking for a Stark Rider. Jump in there. Like, get in there. Like, because I didn't really play Night's Watch until the articles.
So. We're going to have to see what you think. We got to get some written thoughts about things in 2021, the 2021 update.
Yeah, I'm excited for the game as a whole. I think they're going to clean up. I think with having all the time off, they've really had time to evaluate everything and be like, okay, what works, what doesn't, and let's just clean slate, almost, kind of, sort of, while keeping the themes, and I'm very excited for that.
Yeah, for me, it was just always about the tactics cards, and, you know, let's be honest, I know some people are going to be upset about having the opportunity to buy new cards, right? But it's like, if you can't touch the tactics cards, the things that were designed, like, 4 years ago, you know, they don't necessarily age as well, and there's other things that we change, and, like, just being able to touch that. And maybe they don't need to test them for a long time now. And it's like, you know, not as big a deal. But I just think that opens up so much. And so I'm excited to keep seeing what's getting revealed here. So the Commanders came out today. That was super cool. I will eagerly await your podcast about that. And we'll go from there.
Awesome. Well, thank you, Chase, for joining us.
Yeah, thanks for having me on.
Oh, can I steal your closing line?
Because sure, go for it.
I'm going to mess it up. It's way too much pressure.
Yeah.
I'm sweating now thinking about
what?
It.
Carl, you have to go for it. I'm pretty sure there's been a couple times where we've just been like, yada, yada. We'll hang up and then we'll be like, oh.
And until next time, I hope you get your miniatures on the table.
Amazing. Guys, thanks so much for having me on.
Hey, thanks for coming, man. It was awesome.
Yeah, thanks for coming on. This was fun.